this year, during the Kartik month, I'll be going with a group of devotees to Vrindavan. And probably because the size of the group, one of the places we won't be able to go to is Radhakund and Shyamakund, because it's very narrow passageways and things like that. So I thought of taking you there by picture tonight to Radhakund, Shyamakund. Is that a nice plan? Radhakund, Shyamakund. Because I presented part one here at the Seattle Temple before, I'm not going to review part one or do it again, although there's lots of people here who haven't seen part one or been to Radhakund, Shyamakund. But I'll give a little background. Radhakund, we're followers of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was teaching pure devotional service that's attainable through the chanting of the holy names of the Lord. By chanting the holy names of the Lord, it awakens love, natural dormant quality of love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And what Lord Chaitanya gave was not only that love of the Personality of Godhead, but very specific love of Krishna in Vrindavan. I'll go back a little bit. According to the Vedic picture of time, time is cyclical. There are four yugas that cycle again and again, just like we have here in the West, we have four seasons. It's just now ending the spring and just beginning the summer. And we know what comes after that. Fall. And we know what comes after that. Winter. And we know what comes after that. Spring. As the seasons cycle again and again, according to Vedic picture of time, the ages of mankind, they cycle again and again. Satyug, Tretyug, Dwapara-yug, Kali Yuga. And then again, Satyug, Tretyug, Dwapara-yug, Kali Yuga. And they cycle again and again. And one of those yuga cycles is very long. It's 4,320,000 years. And 1,000 of those yuga cycles equals one day of Brahma. That the duration of his day is 1,000 times 4,320,000. And his night is of equal duration. And he lives for 100 years. So you can calculate the duration of the universe after which the universe is withdrawn. And the period of its being withdrawn is equal to the period that it's manifest. It's cyclical, the picture. If you were going to create a universe, you would probably do it the same way. It's cyclical, isn't it? No, just again and again. So in each of the four yugas, Satyug, Tretyug, Dwapara-yug, Kali-yuga, there is a means of achieving spiritual perfection, most effective for that particular age. It's called Yuga Dharma. And in Satyug-yuga, the most effective means for spiritual perfection is the process of meditation. People had qualification that we don't have in this age. And then in the next age, it was by the performance of yajna, like during the time of Lord Ramachandra. Yajna, the performance of Vedic yajna, was the principal means. They also did other things, but that's the principal means. And then in Dwapara-yuga, deity worship or archana, process, most effective means for achieving spiritual perfection. We're still doing deity worship. We're still doing some meditation. But the most significant means in Dwapara-yuga was deity worship. And in this age, the process of chanting the holy name. And then the cycle again and again and again. Four yugas, four yuga dharmas. then personalities that deliver that yuga dharma in each of the four yugas, a yuga avatar. So now that we have this picture of cyclical time, Krishna appears once in every day of Brahma, which means there's 999 other yugas where Krishna doesn't appear, the original personality of Krishna doesn't appear. It's Vasudev Krishna, four-armed form of Vasudev, along with Sankarshan, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha, the four Chaturvyuha personalities. They appear. But once in the day of Brahma, Krishna, the original personality of Godhead who resides in Goloka Vrindavan, he descends. And after him, again, once in the day of Brahma, and it's very specific. Krishna is very regulated. In the 28th yuga cycle of the 7th Manu, Vaivasvata Manu, during that portion of the 1,000 yuga cycles, Krishna appears and then Lord Chaitanya appears. So there's 999 other Kali Yugas in each day of Brahma where Lord Chaitanya doesn't appear. And you know what the Yuga Dharma is? Chanting of the holy name. But they're chanting of the holy name of names of Vishnu, like we find in Mahabharata, Vishnu Sahasranam, chanting of the names of Vishnu. And they deliver one to the abode of Vaikuntha. But once in the day of Brahma comes Lord Chaitanya, and he delivers love of Krishna as is found in Vrindavan. Therefore we have this prayer. Namo Maha Vadanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gora Trishe Namaha, which means that we're offering our respects, Namaha, to Lord Chaitanya who is delivering what no one else offered before. Love of Krishna as found in Vrindavan. Braja Prema, love of Krishna in Vrindavan. So what we're going to do this evening is we're going to visit that place where Braja Prema of Krishna is at its peak. Of the followers of Lord Chaitanya, foremost amongst this awesome assembly of great associates was Rupa Goswami. Those who are followers of Lord Chaitanya are followers of Rupa Goswami. Those of you that have read Nectar of Devotion, you know this term, Rupanuga. Those in the line of Lord Chaitanya, that's us, we're Rupanugas. Anuga means follow. We're followers of Rupa Goswami because he's a follower of Lord Chaitanya. Most confidential understanding of Lord Chaitanya's teachings come through Rupa Goswami. And those of you that are taking the Bhakti Shastri course, you call it something else here? You call it Bhakti Shastri?
Bhakti Gita.
Bhakti Gita. You call it Bhakti Gita course. So one of the texts that you study, actually two of the four texts that you study are Rupa Goswami's texts. Nectar of Devotion, Nectar of Instruction. In Nectar of Instruction, the last three texts are focused on what we're going to speak about this evening. The previous eight texts, yes, 9, 10, 11. So the first eight texts are describing the process of devotional service, the means of achieving perfection through devotional service, that which destroys devotional service, the stages of bhakti that come from devotional service, up to the topmost stage of devotional service. And then it describes where we're going today by pictures, is the place where Radharani lived. Well, not where she lived, where she performed pastimes with Krishna. There's a verse that says, of all the places that are sacred, Vaikuntha is in the transcendental realm. And of all the Vaikuntha realms, the place where Krishna performed his pastimes in Vrindavan is most sacred. And the amongst those places where Krishna performed his pastimes, the forest of Vrindavan is most sacred, because there Krishna performed his rasa dance with the gopis. And even more sacred than the rasa dance is Govardhan Hill, because there Krishna, with his own hand, he lifted this hill and gave shelter to all the residents of Vrindavan and uninterrupted association and darshan of him for 7 days. A very unique leela. And at Govardhan Hill, the most sacred place is the Radha Kund, the abode where Srimati Radharani has her special kund, because that kund is no different than Srimati Radharani. It's the most sacred place in the universe, spiritual or material universe, according to Rupa Goswami. And then he also describes how uniquely special is Radharani, and that place where she takes residence and performs sporting pastimes with Krishna. Because Radha is most dear to Krishna, therefore similarly Radha Kund is most dear to Krishna. And he says, who would not take residence there? So let's go. Why are we over here? Go there. And the answer is, we're not qualified, because if we tried to go there, most certainly we would make offenses. And if you make offenses in Radha Kund, you're in big trouble. So you can go to visit, but when you go to visit, you should go in a very reverential mood, very respectful mood, because it's the most sacred place in the whole universe. It's like, you know, when you make some trip to come to the temple to see the deities. And when you come before the deity, you're very respectful, because this is the deity of Krishna. Now look at our pujari seated there. He's not just seeing the deity, he's directly touching the deity and dressing the deity and bathing the deity in very, very intimate service. So one who does that service, not just the pujari seated here, but many of the members, they also do regular deity worship. And when you're doing regular deity worship, you're doing any deity worship, you have to be very, very careful, because this is Krishna. And Balaram and Jagannath and Subhadra and Lord Nrisingadev, and you must be very careful. So for our entrance into there's some images, I'm going to show pictures that are places of Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan, and temples that are commemorating those pastimes. So I invite you to be in a prayerful mood, because otherwise it's nice stories, and that's nice also. You can hear nice stories and it's enlivening. But to enter into the mystery of Vrindavan, it takes a lot of control of the mind and control of the senses and a peaceful condition. Boys, if you're going to sit in the front row, you're going to have to sit still. And if you can't sit still, there's a back row. Okay? Thank you. Now, one other thing before I begin. When I visit here in November, at Thanksgiving time, I've made this commitment a number of years now in a row. I take a theme and speak on a theme for some number of days. And like it's for me, it's a highlight of my year. I prepare and meditate on the subject matter and try to deliver a nice message for all of you. And the message this year is going to be Sri Brahma Samhita. And for those of you that don't know what Sri Brahma Samhita is, it's probably because it's sitting on your shelf, and each time you take it off the shelf and you open it up, and you put it back on the shelf because you don't have your dictionary handy. Then you take it out and get your dictionary handy, and you have to look up too many words, so you put it back on the shelf. It's, the commentary is by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and the language is very high. Even it's not his primary language. His primary language was Bengali, but he spoke, he wrote English better than those of us that it's our first language. His language is very high. So I'm going to make some attempt to unpack some of that language and present what the message of Sri Brahma Samhita is. But one of those messages connects with the very first leela that I'm going to describe. So, in Sri Brahma Samhita, there's an explanation about Krishna's manifest pastimes and his unmanifest pastimes. The manifest pastimes are once in the day of Brahma. Krishna appears in such a way that anyone and everyone can see his pastimes. Unqualified, qualified, in between, anyone and everyone can see Krishna's pastimes. And then he withdraws them. That's called prakat. And then there's the other kind, where they're not manifest. And there's two kinds of not manifest. One is in Goloka Vrindavan, I'm raising my arm up here because that means it's the spiritual world far, far beyond the material world. Goloka Vrindavan. Krishna's pastimes eternally going on in Goloka Vrindavan. That's one kind of unmanifest or aprakat lila. And there's another kind in Gokula, or that place that we'll go to visit when we go to Vrindavan. Krishna's pastimes are also eternally going on in that abode, but they're not manifest to ordinary people's vision. That's the aprakat lila. So, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur explains that those aprakat pastimes can be directly experienced. One is when Krishna appears, and the other is by two processes. One of those processes is called mantra, upasana. Upasana means worship. And there are, he describes the process. The mantra upasana process is, there are pastimes of Krishna, singular pastimes commonly, or features of Krishna, less like some beautiful paintings that I've shown earlier, images here, beautiful illustrations of Krishna's pastimes. And there are verses in Brahma Samhita, and also our Gayatri mantras are that type of mantra that by meditating deeply upon the mantra, you can enter into the pastime. Not only see it, you can enter into the pastime. And it's compared to entering into a lake. Not always, but commonly, lakes are fed by some stream of water, and then there's a lake. And then entering into the lake, you can enter into the stream of water and then enter into the ongoing flow of the river, which is the second kind is called sva rasaki, which is in Bhaktisiddhanta's language, it's ecstatic jubilation of the heart, where Krishna's pastimes are just unfolding and happening within your heart. And you can enter into those pastimes. You can experience Krishna, his unmanifest pastime become manifest to that such a devotee. So we're going to visit a place just now at Radhakund, where one of our great acharyas, amongst the six Goswamis, they're all great, but one, this particular one is Raghunath Das Goswami, who disclosed a particular leela that he experienced and then related to us in the form of a book. When we think of these, those of you that know our acharyas, Raghunath Das Goswami is not known for writing books. Rupa Goswami is known for writing books. He wrote many books. And Sanatan Goswami wrote many books. And Jiva Goswami wrote many, many books. Raghunath Das Goswami hardly wrote books, but what he wrote, whoa. He's disclosing the spiritual world that he was experiencing because of his Krishna consciousness. Jiva Goswami, in his commentary on Sri Brahma Samhita, he writes, even today, this was during the time of the Goswamis, even today, there are some very rare people who can enter into Krishna's unmanifest pastimes. He happened to be one of them. Because he also wrote books describing Krishna's pastimes. Very detailed, elaborate descriptions of Krishna's pastimes. And they're pastimes that you don't read in Srimad Bhagavatam. They weren't fiction. They were his experiences of Krishna's pastimes. So this is background for what we're about to present here. And some of you, whoever there was here for the part one, knows this pastime. It's called the pearl pastime. He wrote a book indicating the pearl pastime. At least it's popularly known like that. But it's a place that looks, externally, it looks quite ordinary. Take a look and see what the place looks like. You want a copy? My arm isn't that long. Can you bring it around? Time out for a commercial here. It's a big file. We're almost there. You can't circulate this. I'm just letting you know. Okay. It's slide number 47. Okay. These deities, by the way, are Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's deities. He spent some time in Vrindavan. And one of the places he spent time was at Radhakund. He established a little temple. And these are his deities that he personally worshipped in Radhakund. And just going away from Radhakund a little bit, maybe 10 yards from where Bhaktisiddhanta's place is, his temple, is a place called Malya Hari Kund. Because there, at this location, Krishna grew pearls from a pearl garden. You ever heard of that before? You're going to hear about it tonight. Here's the place. It really looks fancy, right? Place where they keep cow dung paddies and the little Brijbasi children. And over here is the Kund. Radha Kund, when Lord Chaitanya found Radha Kund, it was just a pond in the middle of a rice field. But he declared, this is not just a pond in the middle of a rice field, this is Radha Kund. And then later, the Radha Kund that we see today was excavated by Raghunath Das Goswami. He made his residence by Radha Kund, and one very wealthy business person became so impressed by his Krishna consciousness and his devotion, he wanted to do some service. So he offered him some wealth, because that's the service that he had to offer. And Raghunath said, I don't need any wealth. But if you like, you can use this to excavate Radha Kund. And he agreed, and so he gave Raghunath, Das Goswami gave direction, Radha Kund was excavated under his direction. So one of the places near Radha Kund is this Malyahari Kund. It's also very unimposing, not impressive. But there's a wonderful pastime that's connected with the place that Raghunath Das Goswami wrote a book about. And I'm going to narrate in simple form what the book says. And the book begins in Dwaraka. In Dwaraka, Satyabhama is with Krishna in one of the palaces. And Satyabhama asks Krishna a question. She said, I heard that when you lived in Vrindavan, you grew pearls from a pearl tree. Is that true? And Krishna smiled. He said, yes, it's true, I'll tell you how I grew pearls from a pearl tree. So then he begins narrating. When he was very young, living in Vrindavan, Krishna was taking care of the cows. And he was very inspired to serve the cows, not just because it was the occupation of his father, but he loved the cows. So one day he became so inspired, he thought, I'd like to decorate my cows with garlands of pearls. Then he thought, where can I get enough pearls to decorate my cows? Then he thought, the gopis, they have pearl necklaces. I'll go and ask them if they can give some pearls for my cows to make pearl necklaces. So very innocently, Krishna saw the gopis and he proposed, can you give me some pearls? I'd like to decorate the 900,000 cows of Nanda Maharaj with pearl necklaces. And if there's not enough pearls for all of them, then at least my two favorite cows. And you know what the two names of his two favorite cows are? Where is she? Harani is one of them. Huh? No, not Surabhi. There's another name. But something in Harani. Huh? Hamsi and Harani. So, you see the gopi, their hands on her hips like this, and wearing a peacock looking sari, that's Lalita. And standing behind her, dressed in blue, that's Vishakha. But Lalita is very strong speaker. She said, our pearls are too good for your cows. You're going to have to find some other place to get pearls. Sorry. But Krishna wasn't discouraged. He really wanted to serve the cows. So he went to Mother Jasoda and said, Mother Jasoda, Mother Jasoda, I'd like some pearls to make garlands for Nanda Maharaj's cows. Mother Jasoda, can I have some pearls? She said, well, we have some pearls, but there's not enough to decorate your cows. He said, that's okay. I'll make a pearl garden. Mother Jasoda, can I have some pearls to make a pearl garden? And Mother Jasoda said, Krishna, Don't you know, pearls come from the ocean. They don't come from trees. And Krishna said, no, no, I know. I've helped Nanda Maharaj. We dig little holes in the ground, and we put seeds in the ground, and we cover up the ground and water the ground, and all kinds of nice things come out of the ground. Mother Jasoda, can I have some pearls to make a pearl garden? And Mother Jasoda had so much affection for Krishna, she agreed. So she went to the treasury, and she got some pearl necklaces, and she broke the string and gave Krishna some pearls. So Krishna went to Malyahari Kund, and he started his pearl garden. And he was watering and very carefully looking after the pearls. And you know what? After some time, from the ground came a little poof, little shoots of all around, little pearl trees. Krishna was very excited, and he went to the gopis and said, come, take a look at my pearl garden that's soon going to produce pearls from pearl trees. And the gopis said, no, there's no such thing as a pearl garden. Let's go and see. So they went and looked, and they saw. They said, that's not pearl trees. That's thorn trees. And they just laughed and laughed and walked away. And Krishna said, no, no, you'll see. They're pearl trees. They're pearl trees. And very quickly, the little shoots grew and grew, and sure enough, they produced pearls. They produced hundreds of very large pearls, and they were not only large, they were radiant. And not only they were radiant, they were fragrant. So he then brought the gopis, come and see. They're like pearl trees, they produced pearls. You said they were thorn trees, but they're pearl trees. And when the gopis came and they looked, they were astonished. Krishna produced thorn trees. And they weren't going to be stood up and surpassed by Krishna. They said, we're going to make a better pearl garden than your pearl garden. So they thought of the best place. There's a nice place right by the river Jamuna, under very nearby a tree, so there's always some shade and sometimes there's some sunlight. And they thought, so Krishna watered the pearl trees with milk. But the gopi said, we're going to water the pearl trees with yogurt and milk and butter. They took the necklaces, and even they went into the storerooms of their mothers without asking and got some extra pearls to make a big pearl garden. And after some time, out of the ground came little shoots. And they were very excited and told Krishna, come look, come look. Our pearl garden is growing too. And Krishna said, that's not pearl trees, that's thorn trees. They said, no, no, it's pearl trees. You'll see. And after some time, the trees matured. And sure enough, it was thorn trees. And Radharani thought, oh, we're in big trouble now because we took all the pearls from our parents' storeroom. And now how are we going to replace those pearls? And then they thought, there's only one way we're going to get enough pearls to replace them. We have to go ask Krishna for some pearls. But we've offended Krishna so badly. We spoke badly and treated him badly and ridiculed him. He's not very likely to give us any pearls. So we're going to have to negotiate. So Radharani picked the two best negotiators. Meanwhile, Krishna had so many pearls. He not only decorated all the cows, he decided he would decorate all the peacocks with pearl necklaces. You see the peacock? Whoops. Pearl necklace. And after decorating all the peacocks, he decided he would give pearl necklaces to all the monkeys. See, the monkey has got a pearl necklace. You'll see a close-up of that guy. Krishna, you have so many pearls. So we have brought some gold ornaments and some jewels and we'd like to bargain with you over the price of your pearls. And the largest volume of that book is The Negotiating Pastime. I guess there's some special rasa in Vrindavan about Vaishyas and their bargaining skills. But it's like long section. And the way that it ends up is Krishna says, look at these pearls, look how big they are. You ever seen a pearl that's this big? And they're fragrant and they're luminous. Why, you'd have to give me all of what's in those boxes to get even one of my pearls. Sorry, they're not for sale. And the gopis look so sad. So Krishna said, I'll tell you what, I'll give you one. And he reached in the bag and pulled out a broken pearl and said, here, you can take this one. So the gopis went back and reported this to Srimati Radharani. And Radharani was in big distress because it was on her behalf that the pearls were taken from their parents' storerooms. What are we going to do? What are we going to do? Well, Krishna knew his dearly beloved Srimati Radharani was in great anxiety. So he decided, all right, I'll make her a necklace of pearls. As I've made for all the monkeys and all the peacocks and all the cows, I'll make Radharani a necklace. And after making the necklace, he really liked the necklace so much, he said, it should be delivered in a golden box with her name on it. And then he thought, this is so nice, I should make one for Lalita and Vishakha also. And after he started making the necklaces for them and gold boxes for them, he then thought, I should make for all of her dear friends a special necklace and a box with their name on it. So Krishna's pictured here bringing this box with the necklace for Srimati Radharani and for each of the gopis. And Radharani was so pleased. Not only she could return the pearls to the parents' storerooms, but she was accepting the love that Krishna was honoring and offering to her. So she told the gopis, we should do something to reciprocate with Krishna's kindness. After all, we treated him so badly. Now he's given us all pearl necklaces. We should do something. So Radharani, one of her expertises is in cooking. So she decided, let's make a big feast for all the cowherd boys and for Krishna. There's the close-up of the monkey wearing his necklace. And here's Krishna's giving Radharani her pearl necklace. So many pearls, she's feeding the pearls to the swans. So they made a big feast and sat Radha and Krishna together and offered them their meal and to all the cowherd boys, and they were all very happy. So this is disclosed, a pastime of Radha and Krishna, as experienced by and entered into by Raghunath Das Goswami. And then he very kindly left this literature behind him for us to envision at least one of the many unlimited pastimes that Radha and Krishna perform in this sacred place, Radha Kund and Shyama Kund. Now we're going to continue from that Malyahari Kund to visit some other places along the bank of Radha Kund is this Rameshwara Shiva. And so where we were, Malyahari Kund is out that way, and now we're heading back towards Radha Kund, and we're going to go along this direction. We're heading for the Gopinath temple. We're also going to visit some places over here. Right at the corner, as you see in the map here, there's a place where it's Vrikeshwara Pandit's temple, and Radhakanta is the name of the deity. And as you see in the painting, this is a photograph of the painting that's at the side of this Radhakanta temple. And some of you who have read Chaitanya Charitamrita, you know a little bit about who is Vrikeshwara Pandit. And for those of you that haven't, I'll just briefly describe. He was known for two things. One was he was a very ecstatic dancer. Now sometimes we have kirtan. In most congregations there's one or two or a handful of devotees that they really like dancing. And they dance and they dance and they dance. And then the kirtan's over and they take prasadam. But the kirtans of Lord Chaitanya were prema sankirtan, and they would dance and dance and have kirtan and kirtan for hours and hours and hours and hours and days and days. Vrikeshwara Pandit was known to have danced in ecstatic love of God for 72 straight hours. It's described in Chaitanya Charitamrita. How many days is that? 3 straight days. Yes. 3 straight days. Not just like walking, dancing, and not just dancing, dancing ecstatically for 72 hours. And when persons would see him dancing, they would experience love of God because he was distributing love of God. There's a pastime described in Chaitanya Bhagavat where Devananda Pandit, who had offended Srivas Pandit. Devananda Pandit was a scholar, but not a qualified scholar, a mundane scholar. But he liked Srimad Bhagavatam, and so he would speak on Srimad Bhagavatam, but he wasn't qualified. So one time when Srivas Pandit was passing in Kaliagram, he was just passing by a large assembly. He heard the Srimad Bhagavatam verse that he was speaking, and he fell to the ground in ecstatic love, just hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam verse, right in the midst of the assembly. So the persons that were organizing the event on behalf of Devananda Pandit, they picked him up and threw him out. And Srivas didn't mind, he just went peacefully back to his home. But Lord Chaitanya was omniscient, he knew that he had offended Srivas. So he confronted him, said, "You're a big offender. You're going to suffer greatly for this offense that you made against a great devotee of the Lord." So later he became rectified by Vrikeshwara Pandit. Because one time he saw Vrikeshwara Pandit in Navadvip, in the middle of the street, where there was kirtan, dancing and dancing and dancing. And you know what happens when that happens. There was a big crowd. So to allow Vrikeshwara Pandit to dance, he moved everybody to the side so he could dance freely. He was so moved, not just by, "Oh boy, you're a good dancer," the ecstatic love that he was exhibiting. So he invited him to come to his home, and he honored him, and Vrikeshwara Pandit then spoke Srimad Bhagavatam. And when he heard Vrikeshwara Pandit speak Srimad Bhagavatam, then he understood what Srimad Bhagavatam was. And he wanted to know, "Where did you learn this?" And he learned it from Lord Chaitanya. So he became a devotee of Lord Chaitanya through the association with Vrikeshwara Pandit. So the same Vrikeshwara Pandit, this ecstatic devotee, sometimes stayed at Radhakund. And the temple that he worshipped is this one, the deities of Radhakanta. This is a close-up of that painting that's depicting Radhakanta, Krishna, in his intimate association with Radha and his gopi girlfriends. There's a close-up of Krishna's face from the painting. Very, very exquisite artwork. And there's the deity of Radhakanta, we're going to get a close-up of the deity, but on the left side of the photograph here is the Murti of Rukreshwara Pandit. One at the top is in the winter, and the bottom is in the summer. Very different climate in Vrindavan, depending on the season. Here's a close-up of the altar. As you see, on our far left is Mahaprabhu, and then just by his side is Lalita, and then Radha Kanta. So, in his spiritual position, well, Lalita is served by Sri Rupa Manjari. And the assistant of Sri Rupa Manjari is the same as Prakashra Pandit in his spiritual form. And so Lalita is on the altar. He's serving to assist Lalita, who is by the side of Mahaprabhu and Radha Kanta. Radha Kanta is so expert, he has two flutes. And directly across the street is the Gopal deity. And you see up at the top layer of the altar is Gopal. And the deity of Gopal, it's actually, it's called, locally, it's called the ISKCON temple in Radhakund. But it's not an ISKCON temple, exactly. It was a temple established by the king of Manipur. And there's some history. So the king of Manipur had this Gopal deity. And as you know, Manipal is practically a Krishna conscious state. The king is Krishna conscious. And the members of the country are very much also Krishna conscious. There's things other than Krishna, it's Kali Yuga, things other than Krishna consciousness that go on. But largely a Krishna conscious place. So the king had a dream in which the deity of Gopal appeared in his dream and said, I want to be worshipped at Radhakund. And so he took that as an instruction from Gopal. And so he went and negotiated for a piece of land by the side of Radhakund. And then as the temple was being planned, they hadn't begun the construction, he had another dream in which Gopal said, I want to be facing in the easterly direction, so that when the sun is rising over Radhakund, the sun shines directly in my face. So I won't need a lamp, that people can take darshan without a lamp. And so that's the arrangement. The those of you who have been to Radhakund, surely you'll visit this temple. And in the morning, of course, the sun moves according to the season. But in the middle of the summer, when the sun rises, the door is open and the sun shines directly on the deity, just as Gopal wanted. And in the backside of the temple, oh, you see, Srila Prabhupada is also on the altar. It's because the king of Manipur had such a relationship with Sarup Damodar Maharaj that he requested Sarup Damodar Maharaj, you see up brahmacharis, have them look after the deity worship. So he took care of that. And to this day, the brahmacharis of ISKCON are looking after the deity worship. Therefore, it's called the ISKCON temple. But it's the king of Manipur's temple. And in the backside of the temple is the samadhi of Sarup Damodar Maharaj. Because he spent some time here, and inside, the services that Sarup Damodar Maharaj offered to Srila Prabhupada and to ISKCON are very, very formidable in the work of the Bhaktivedanta Institute. So it's a very nice place to go and offer your respects to Sarup Damodar Maharaj when you visit Radhakund. So we visited right here. That's the temple of Vakreshwara Pandit, Radhakanta. Then we visited this Manipur temple. Now we're going just off the Parikrama Marg, just in a little bit, to the temple of Radha Shama Sundar, as you see. And hopefully, yeah. There's the outside of the temple. And we're going to go inside the temple in just a moment. Hopefully. Yeah. There's the deity of Radha Shyama Sundar, a deity similar to the deity that's in Vrindavan town, but was worshipped by Shyamananda. And there's a very wonderful story that I'm going to narrate most of. Shyamananda, you see in the lower, on the upper right-hand side, this is where he would sit and do his japa. And down below is a photograph of a painting that's showing a pastime involving Shyamananda. Shyamananda was, we'll go back, Lord Chaitanya had principal associates that resided in Vrindavan. We call them the six Goswamis. And the senior most amongst them were Rupa and Sanatan. And the youngest amongst them was Jiva Goswami. So after the departure of Sanatan Goswami and Rupa Goswami, Jiva Goswami became the self-effulgent, self-evident successor or most prominent, elevated member of the lineage from Lord Chaitanya. And then Jiva Goswami had three principal students who he trained thoroughly. One of them was Shyamananda. Another was Srinivasacharya. And another was Narottam Das Thakur. Those of you that are not new, you know those names. They're very important members of our line and the service that they did. Maybe a little less known as Shyamananda. So I'm going to describe a little bit about his life. He was born in a Brahmin family in Bengal. And one day, when he entered into the river to take bath, he came out very much transformed. And his transformation was of an intense feeling of separation from Lord Chaitanya, because he had grown up as a small boy hearing about Lord Chaitanya. But the intensification of his love for Lord Chaitanya was so strong, and his feelings of separation from Lord Chaitanya were so strong, they started calling him Dukhi, because he was very sad, feeling separation. But being a very qualified young Brahmin, he eventually took shelter of another very important member of Lord Chaitanya's associates named Hriday Chaitanya. That's another long story. And it's too late to tell another long story. But Hriday Chaitanya was such an ecstatic personality, that the deity form, it's a long story, but the deity form of Gornitai entered into his heart and disappeared. His name, initiated name, was Chaitanya Das. But after that event, he was called Hriday Chaitanya. And sometime you should visit his place. So Dukhi became initiated by Hriday Chaitanya, and he was called Krishna Das. Chaitanya Das called his disciple Krishna Das. But he was then affectionately known as Dukhi Krishna Das because of his mood of separation from Lord Chaitanya. Because he was so qualified in scholarship, he suggested or he instructed Dukhi Krishna Das to go to Vrindavan and study the writings of the Goswamis under the care of Jiva Goswami. And he was very happy to get the opportunity to go to Vrindavan and study under the exalted Jiva Goswami, under the order of his spiritual master. This is the deities in Ambika Kalna that entered into the heart of Dukhi Krishna. They're pretty big deities too. Okay, so this is painting of Duki Krishna Das coming to Vrindavan, being received by Jiva Goswami to study together with the other two who are pictured here, Narottam Das Thakur and Srinivas Acharya, such exalted personalities. Although he was a very qualified individual, Duki Krishna was also very humble, and he requested from Jiva Goswami some simple service. So, understanding his mood, his heart, Jiva Goswami gave him a service of, here's a broom, and each morning you can go sweep. There's an area where Radha and Krishna are said to perform their rasa dance every night. So you make the place clean for Radha and Krishna perform their rasa dance. Now that rasa dance means for us the aprakat, that which we can't see, but it's nonetheless going on. Unmanifest pastimes that we can't see. So Duki Krishna was very devotional. So he cleaned the kunj, this grove of trees area where his mood was, I'm making it nice for Radha and Krishna to perform their rasa dance. And sure enough, so he's now become a student along with the other two in receiving instructions in the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, the writings of the predecessor of Goswamis. And one day when he was cleaning, he found an ankle ornament just lying on the ground. And so he picked it up, and when he picked it up, his whole body began trembling in ecstatic emotion. And he realized this isn't an ordinary ankle ornament. So he decided that he would dig a little hole, put it in the hole, and bury it, and keep it in a safe place, and try to find out who the ankle ornament belonged to. The next day, a very old lady came by and asked, "Did you see an ankle ornament somewhere here in this grove of trees? I hear that you're coming every day and cleaning. Maybe you found it." So Duki Krishna said, "Yes, I found it. But how do I know it belongs to you? I'd like to meet the person who it belongs to." Very clever. And the old lady smiled and transformed herself into the young gopi that you see in the left, right-hand side of the painting, and said, "Come with me." So the young gopi brought Duki Krishna Das to the abode of Srimati Radharani by spiritual transport means. And Duki Krishna then assumed the form of a manjari, Kanaka manjari, pictured here at the feet of Srimati Radharani. And Radharani said, "That was my ankle ornament. Actually, I left it behind just for you to find, so I could bring you here, because I was so much pleased by your mood of service in making the kunj very clean. I wanted to see you, so I had you brought here." And Radharani then placed the ankle ornament on the forehead of Duki Krishna Das, and suddenly a tilak mark appeared on her forehead. And she said, Radharani said, "From this day forward, you'll be known as Shyamananda. And I'm going to give you a deity of Krishna to worship." It's initiation by Srimati Radharani. There's the mark on her forehead. Here's the deity of Krishna. And Then Radharani said, so you can go back now and just resume your service, hearing scriptures from Jiva Goswami. So Kanaka Manjari descended again to this earthly realm of Vrindavan. And, oh, Radharani said, whatever you do, don't tell anyone. He had to tell Jiva Goswami. So he disclosed to Jiva Goswami all of what happened. And Jiva Goswami embraced him very strongly and said, you're so fortunate. You've received the direct darshan and mercy of Srimati Radharani. You are so fortunate. So, as time passed, Duki Krishna is now being known as Shyamananda. And Duki Krishna, instead of wearing the tilak marking given to him by Hriday Chaitanya, is wearing this other tilak marking. And some followers of Hriday Chaitanya were making pilgrimage to Vrindavan, and they were so happy to see Duki Krishna Das, but they were very unhappy to see him now being known as Shyamananda and with a different tilak marking. And so they started some gossip. You know, psst, 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 psst. It happens, right? Psst, psst. Jiva Goswami must have given him some second reinitiation. And this is against Vaishnava rules and regulations. How could Jiva Goswami do this? But they didn't say anything to Jiva Goswami, of course. But they went back to Navadvip and to Bengal, and they told Hriday Chaitanya what they saw, what they assumed. And Hriday Chaitanya was very disturbed. How could an exalted Vaishnava like this, Jiva Goswami, do such a thing? So he discussed it amongst the other senior Vaishnavas, and they decided we should go to Vrindavan and ask Jiva Goswami to explain what has happened. And so they did. As you see, a large number of people in the background behind Shyamananda. And so they waited outside of Vrindavan, outside across the Jamuna. Jiva Goswami didn't know why they had come. He just heard that they had come. So he was very happy. He went to receive them. How wonderful. You've come to Vrindavan. Our good fortune. He said, well, let me tell you why I've come. I want to ask you a question. How is it that my disciple who I put in your care is no longer going by his given spiritual name, but he has another spiritual name? And he has another kind of tilak. And Jiva Goswami couldn't say, because Radharani said not to say. So he said, you're going to have to ask your disciple. Pass the buck, right? So Hriday Chaitanya said, very well, bring my disciple. And there's his disciple, Duki Krishna Das, now Shyamananda, being confronted by his spiritual master. That what you explain to me how this happened, and you better give me a good explanation, because this is a big offense. And Shyamananda said, may I have some time to give you a proper answer? And his spiritual master said, you can have as much time as you like, but I definitely want a proper answer. What has happened? So, Shyamananda, right before his spiritual master, concentrated his mind in deep meditation upon Radharani. And as you see in the top part of the picture, he was, for the second time, spiritually transported to the abode of Srimati Radharani, where again he's assumed the form of Kanaka Manjari, and Kanaka Manjari is crying and crying and crying, and what can I do? Because you told me not to say. And but Jiva Goswami is now being blamed for some bad thing that he didn't do. And how can I explain this to Hriday Chaitanya? So Radharani said, everything will be all right. You just do as I'm saying. You go back And you'd say to Hriday Chaitanya, it all happened in a dream. And as proof, you try to wash off the tilak, and if the tilak doesn't wash off, then you can understand it happened in a dream. And if the tilak washes off, then you can take it that I lied to you, and you can punish me as you wish. So Kanaka Manjari then returned, and Shyamananda came to external consciousness from his trance, and repeated to Hriday Chaitanya exactly what Radharani said to say. Hriday Chaitanya said, this is a very good proposal. Bring some water and a cloth. And he tried to wash up the tilak and it wouldn't wash off. He said, very well, I accept. This happened in a dream. Now I'm satisfied. Jiva Goswami didn't make some transgression. You haven't made some transgression. I'm satisfied. That very night, Hriday Chaitanya had a dream. In the dream, Srimati Radharani appeared and said to him, your disciple, Shyamananda, is very dear to me, as are you. You are very fortunate to have such a qualified disciple. It was I who gave him this name. It was I who gave him this tilak. So don't find fault with him, nor Jiva Goswami. Consider yourself very fortunate. And Radharani disappeared from the dream. So the next morning, Hriday Chaitanya was very happy. He embraced his disciple. You may call yourself Shyamananda, very well. You have my permission. You can wear that other tilak, you have my permission. You have made me very happy. So, obviously, Shyamananda told, because we now know the story. But this is the way of, one of the ways of very, very qualified personalities having direct association with Radha and Radha and Krishna. So, Radharani gave this deity form for him to worship. But we also have a deity form that's being given by our, ultimately by our founder Acharya, by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada. This is the place in Vrindavan where the kunj, where Shyamananda was cleaning, where he found the ankle ornament. So there's a little commemorating place. And this is a close-up of the deity of Shyamananda. So we've run out of time and we didn't get very far. So I guess another time we'll have to continue to finish our, at least the next part of our visit to Radha Kund and Shyama Kund. We didn't even get to Shyama Kund yet, but we'll get there. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Hare Krishna. Thank you all for coming. And thank you, Maharaj, for giving wonderful explanation of Radha Pradhan Chakra. Tomorrow morning,